You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Welcome back to Josh Swallows Broadway Season 2, not that 1.5 that we were doing on the live stream. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Boo. How are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm just looking at you and your long, long hair.
Oh gosh, I'm going full on boy band here. Like, I've committed. I know I can get haircut now, but I want you to
get a haircut. If I stop being attracted to you, I'm going to find a new producer.
Well, that's what's important in this business. You always have to have a sexual attraction to your production team.
Hey, hear me out. Hear me out. There's no Me Too going on. I'm going to deny everything, and my fans stand behind me. Oh, wow. Okay, we're going to have to edit that. But Joey just jumped out the window. Hi, I'm so happy to be back with Season 2, and thank you all so much for supporting us. The Patreon has been so much fun. We just did another Zoom party, and it was a lot of fun, and we're going to do more. And I'm really excited about today because not only is it our first episode of Season 2, but it's with my friend Matt Lisey, who I've known since I basically moved to the city.
Really?
I think, yeah. Well, I'll get into it with him, but we were baby chickens when we first met. And now we're not baby chickens. Now we're like the old roosters. But he's also like the only working actor in the world.
Right. So it's like, what, 1 a.m. for him, I think, right now? Or so.
Isn't that crazy? And this is the earliest we've ever recorded.
Where is he?
He's on the moon.
Matt, okay. We're talking about you like you're not here right now.
I know. Okay. Anyway, Alan,
we'll introduce you in the final edit.
I'm going to kick you out of here and I'm going to bring in Matt because we're talking about him like he's not here.
Okay, I love you, miss you. I'll be here.
I love you. Get your hair cut. Bye. Matt!
Gosh.
Matt Lisey, hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm so good. I'm so honored to be on your podcast. I've listened to all of them, I think. And it makes me so happy to, like, I've started listening to them while I've been on this tour, and like, it just makes me feel like you're with me as I have my phone and the ear pods in. I'm walking around these Asian cities being like, oh, it's Josh.
I'm always with you. I'm just like Jesus. I'm always with you in your heart. No, I was thinking back. We met, do you remember during there was a time period in New York City when songwriter Scott Allen was doing Monday Night New Voices?
Yes. It's funny because I did a little recon tonight because I was like, you seem like one of these people I've known forever. But then I was like, what was it that brought us together? And then it was that Monday Night's New Voice.
Yeah. It was the reunion concert where it was like everybody who did one got together and sang.
And then we were all jammed up in that little apartment above the duplex, like all just like meeting each other, having fun. And like, oh, I have to go down and sing now. But I was having more fun upstairs getting to meet everybody.
Then I got to watch, I don't know, your career take off. I remember seeing you off Broadway in The Fantastics, and you were so damn good. Then watching you take over the world in the national tour of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. And you're a fellow Barrymore nominee.
Oh,
yes. Prestigious Barrymore nominee.
Oh, love my Philly people.
Yeah, me too. I miss them.
If only they could bring me back one day. But yeah.
Yeah, but you don't need to because you're the unicorn.
Oh, I mean, I will say I'm going to ride this wave for until it crests or whatever. Like, I'm just going to stay on this one for a minute.
Now, tell us where you are right now.
I'm in Seoul, Korea right now. And we got here in March, which was kind of terrifying because that was like just as the peak of Corona was, it was just like the numbers were starting to consistently go down, like literally like days before we arrived in Seoul. So that was like Terrence, we've been here ever since. And so it was one of those things where like everyone that we were talking to, all our friends and family were just like, Matt, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you should go back. And I was like, it's my job. Like, don't we have to? And so then we were getting a lot of like literally daily correspondence from our producers, just like giving us the lay of the land and what the updates are from the Korean government and what the travel advisories, because we're a very international cast. We have, oh, P.S., I'm doing Phantom of the Opera. It's this world tour of Phantom of the Opera. And so we have people from...
Wait, hold on. You're not just doing Phantom of the Opera, asshole. You're playing...
Oh.
Raoul. I can't even pronounce it. Raoul.
Yeah, apparently, it's been, I don't think Raoul, but it's Raoul, I guess.
Raoul.
With the little French pronunciation, I guess. Yeah, Raoul Vicomte de Chagny. It's been such a treat playing this part. And but yeah, I didn't realize it was going to be the gift that kept on giving, literally like being one of the only jobs right now. So I'm feeling crazy blessed. But yeah, I will say it doesn't go without its own like stresses and freak out moments. And but we're in a very like stable place right now. But leading up to it, it was pretty scary. And as I was saying, like the producers would be like, this is what's going on with the governments and how travel is for all of our people from South Africa, from Australia. And then the U.S., I think those are the main countries that we represent. And so we all have different travel advisories. And they're like, and the people are like, oh, well, Australia's made it a level 4, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so the producers traveled out there to meet us there. So I was like, okay, if you guys are going to be there, I feel like I can go too. So then we literally all like took a leap of faith and like got on these planes to Korea and then met in the theater the next day. And we're like, I'm so glad you guys are all here. No one... like quit or like didn't come on the plane. It was amazing. We all showed up and we just like kind of gave it a try and to see like, cause I mean, there's national theaters in Seoul. If it's like a government owned building, those productions were closed and did not reopen. But then with commercial theaters, those were able to somehow stay open. And that was how we were able to open in Seoul and continue. I could keep going because then we had our own little scare and we had Corona within the company. So now that was a little terrifying and it came out of nowhere because basically, I guess I should say like when we got to Seoul, we're like, okay, how are we going to do this? Like Seoul is, Korea at that point was a hotspot. And
well, first of all, where were you flying from?
Oh yeah. So I think I had, I just left New York and like done some regrouping there and then went home to Kansas City to visit my family. And I flew from Kansas City to Seoul.
And before we go into that, because something that I've always found fascinating about you, you were born in Massachusetts, but didn't you grow up in England or your family's from England?
Yeah. My mom's British. And so I grew up in England. So I have dual citizenship, which is during this process, I was like, oh, maybe I should have my British passport sent over here. So I have that just in case.
Lucky. And if things hit the fan, will you please fucking marry me and just take me out of this country?
You will be the first one. I mean, maybe we could have like a polygamous.
You can hook up with whoever you want to. I don't care. Just get me out of here.
You'll be on the certificate. It'll be you and me, baby.
How did
I just want to say I'm there to videotape all this.
Okay.
Cool. All right.
Thanks, Alan. I appreciate it, babe. As long as you get your hair cut. Now, Matt, how on earth did your poor family end up in Kansas City?
So my dad is from Kansas. And so basically my dad was working in education and was working at American schools overseas. Like, we actually, even right after Boston, we moved, I was just a baby, like an infant, we moved, or no, 6 months old, I think, we moved to Athens, Greece for 2 years. And so that was fucking amazing. And so what's been cool about this tour is I've had these layoff like months. So I've been like kind of like going to like sort of these destinations I've been meaning to go to back when you could travel. So I got to go to Greece and see where my dad taught, and just go to Mykonos and Santorini and all that stuff. But wow. But yeah, we live all these cool places that my parents took me as a baby. So Greece was really a really cool thing that I had no memory of. And then we moved to England to be closer to my mom's family. And so my dad taught at an American school there, which is where I ended up going until fourth grade. And then my dad had always been involved in this family business, which it's an industry that doesn't exist anymore. Pre-press, it's kind of boring, whatever. But he took control and bought the business. And then that's what took us to Kansas. And so so we had this like crazy transatlantic move. But I was so excited though, because at 10, I was in love with everything American and like Trapper Keepers and Gatorade and all these amazing candies. Like, I was like, oh, this is the best place ever. I didn't realize, because it was Wichita, Kansas, and no shade there. But I was like, looking back, I'm like, oh, I don't know about that move. But I was happy to be in the States. And then
you have a cute British accent. Were you like, father, mom, we're going to have Trapper Keepers?
Exactly. I apparently had this weird posh accent, because my mom has like a very like traditional British accent, but mine apparently was very proper. I don't know where it came from, but that went away, because it wasn't cool to be British at 10 in Kansas. So quickly
became like, you ain't American, boy.
Right, exactly.
Okay. So,
yeah,
you fly to Korea,
yeah,
as all the shit is hitting the fan here, and the same is there. It's hitting the fan there too as you're flying there.
I feel like the shit hitting the fan hadn't quite happened yet in the U.S. It was like, it looked like it was. I feel like what is it in Kirkland, Washington? Like that had happened, but it just seemed like it wasn't really happening in the U.S. yet.
It wasn't real yet, yeah.
We were just like, oh, everyone was freaking out for us. And so my family friend who's a doctor, he came over and gave me a couple like N95 masks. And then my mom gave me a ton of gloves and all of like the sanitizer that you could ever dream of. And so I came like with all these supplies. And then I realized that I'm literally in like the safest place to be if dealing with COVID. So at first I was like a little nervous, but it really wasn't. I mean, everyone is such, they obey the rules so well here. And like everyone wears a mask everywhere. And like even when like pre-COVID, like a lot of Asian countries seem to, if they're sick or they're afraid of getting sick, they just wear a mask anyway. Like that's just the culture. So like we were in this other city, Busan, Korea, before it was right as things were starting to happen in Wuhan, and then a few cases had started to hit Korea when we left in early February. And even then, I remember like hearing about COVID and I was like, what is this? And I'm like, oh, it'll be contained or whatever. But then it did start to come to Korea, and we would be like, the show would start and we'd look out into the audience, and then that's when it hit me. Like I just saw a sea of masks. I was like, oh shit. And then I heard a couple people cough, and then it became this chain reaction. I was like, oh shit, this is how I die. I will be sharing the COVID germs with this entire audience and people. And that's how it ends. But,
that's so scary. At first, did you think it was cosplay?
Cosplay? Wait, what?
Were you like, oh wow, they're just really into Phantom? Oh. Were you like, oh, mystery indeed, the chandelier.
Exactly.
Before all of us are dead.
That's me. That was pretty scary. But then it seemed like nothing was really happening after those first few cases in Korea. So then we went home, and then things started to pick up while we were on our layoff. So that's when we're like, oh, I don't know about this. So I came to arms all these supplies, and we made it, I want to say, 2 weeks into our run here in Seoul. And then all of a sudden, we got one of our ballerinas was out of the show for a few shows, and we're like, oh, okay, whatever, she's injured, or maybe she has a cold. People are saying she had a cold. I was like, okay, great. So then I think we had a Tuesday night show. I go to bed, and I wake up, and my phone has blown up, and then there's like this apology from the girl who indeed tested positive for Corona, saying, I'm so sorry. And then I see my email, and then our company manager is like sending us all this stuff. And it's basically like, you are going to be tested. So it's crazy. Literally within 8 hours of finding out she tested positive, they set up a satellite, like triage type, like testing center on the roof of our hotel. So like we go up, so like it was crazy. So we all go up in like twos or threes or whatever. And escorted by like these people in all the safety gear up to the roof, and like, and then to all these people in like hazmat suits. It was like out of a movie. It was insane. And then they did the swab down the nose and the throat, which wasn't the most pleasant thing in the world. But then, and then we went home, and we literally didn't leave the hotel from the night of that Tuesday. So Wednesday morning, like you can't leave your room and you're being tested, and then you won't be able to leave the room until you find out your results. So then we get the results back, and there's one more positive, which is kind of incredible, since it kind of goes to show like the whole, like, how do we move forward as an industry? Granted, like track and trace is something they do here. And so everyone who comes to the theater is, they have all their info. They can contact them. So basically when we had the scare, 8,000 audience members were contacted and said that there were two positive COVID people in the cast. And because of that, you need to get tested and please self-isolate for 2 weeks. So, and so because of that, I'm sure I'm losing my train of thought. So going back to when we found out there was COVID in our company, we thought that when we got the negative results, we'd be able to like leave our room. But unfortunately, that was not the case. So we spent 2 weeks not able to leave our hotel rooms. We couldn't open our door. Like meals would come. It was really sweet. The hotel did an amazing job, and the government of taking care of us during the 2 weeks. But we weren't able to leave. So like the like breakfast would come to the front door, and they would knock. And then I loved it because like nothing was happening in these 2 weeks. We were just like these like sad, lonely people. And so like we'd run to the door because like someone came to the door, and then you'd open it, and they literally be like, oh, can somebody knock, come inside? They'd literally run away from us because they thought that we had Corona. But so yeah, it was crazy. And
must have been so lonely.
It was, but I will say what's interesting is I realized I'm more introverted than I thought from this experience. Like, how have you coped with being cooped up in your apartment?
You know, it depends. I deal with depression. So, you know, when I do live alone, I have cats, which is nice. But the first month of this was really depressing.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, I'm very fortunate to have a really nice place. That sounded so douchey.
No,
I'm really fortunate to live in a castle. But like, it felt like a prison, you know?
Right. Yes. Honestly, for me, it was like not having any like air coming through. So I took out the screens. Like, I'm so thankful. Like for this city, I got a nice like big apartment style hotel room, but like with the kitchen and washing. So it's like I'm set up here. If there was ever a place to quarantine, this is the place. But yeah, like I was like, I need air. Like I need to get out. So I took out the screens in my windows, and I'm just like would stick my head out the window just to get some air. And it was so sweet. Like at noon every day, we would like do it, like whoever's rooms were facing this courtyard, we would we'd have like a 12 o'clock check-in basically. And so we would wave from our windows, and we have this sweet little ballerina who has a teddy bear, and she would like make little signs and put in the window, and so it was almost like not like a are you alive kind of check, but it was just kind of like let's check in and just be like hi, and we would like we did a little like some games via Zoom and like FaceTime each other to check in. And but yeah, I'm so glad it didn't last beyond 2 weeks, because there's only so many puzzles you can do. I did my taxes while I was cooped up.
Wow.
But there's only so many shows you can watch.
Yeah, yeah. So after that 2 weeks, did was everybody cleared to go back?
Yeah, so they waited one more week to get us back into the theater. And it was also a scary time too, because there's no guarantees that we were going to reopen. So we were waiting on the government to see what they were going to say. Like the mayor was making a lot of announcements about like only these types of entertainment type venues can reopen. There was another scare, there wasn't any indication whether we would continue. So we were, I was like, I don't know. I didn't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I was also like prepared like for the email phone call being like, it's time, you guys are going to go home, blah, blah, blah. So,
that's not Debbie Downer. That's being a realist.
Exactly. Exactly. So I was like, I was prepared for the worst. I was hoping for the best. I obviously knew things were probably going to change with our itinerary, but it was also scary too, because at the time, all the new cases that were coming into Korea were foreigners or people who had been abroad. So all the eyes were on us being non-Koreans, it's unclear whether these two people in our cast came with Corona, because one person was asymptomatic, the other person developed some minor symptoms. And so we don't really know, but I think, journalists were kind of wanting to write a story, basically being like, this company brought in Corona, and like, and so it was, so I mean, the PR, PR was like amazing on it. And, we just had to make sure that we just are always like great ambassadors moving forward, always wearing masks. And like, if there's any picture you happen to have without a mask, like maybe don't have that there
destroy
anymore.
Destroy it.
Exactly. Just cause we've always, I mean, that's the thing. We were always so good, like wearing a mask, but like, we're just so used to like, I mean, with the age of narcissism being on social media and all that, like when you post a photo at this point, we weren't posting photos in masks. So like we would do a little photo, hey, it's me in Seoul. And then we'd be like this, but then like, you can't post that. So we would delete those photos of us pulling our masks down. But, we had another week of like, like what's happening. And then we came back and it was kind of like business as usual. Unfortunately, a guy who had no symptoms, he never developed symptoms, but they kept him in. Oh, that's what they do here. You don't sit in your apartment or wherever you're living, waiting to get better, or you get sent to a facility or a hospital, and so that's where you're literally quarantined there with the doctors and nurses until you test positive. I think twice. Don't quote me, but you have to like do a series of like consecutive negative results in order to be released. And for some reason, his test just kept coming back positive. So he was in there for like 6 weeks. And I told him, he's like, you need to write a book. Like that's a story there. And like I'm dealing with the food, cause it's like Korean. And then I think they were keeping watch of them. There might've been cameras. And so they didn't really have any privacy. So it was, I think quite an experience. And I'm so thankful I didn't get it. So then I'm trying to think how many weeks we had of just like, we're kind of back to normal. And then they, because the numbers got down to like, I think single digits for the entire country, which like, I mean, doesn't that sound just like insane at this point? Just like this entire country like would have like 7 one day and then like 8 the next and for like a couple weeks. So then they're like, you know what? We'll like reopen, let's do a test run and like reopen some bars and stuff. So we were just like, I mean, if you can imagine, like, I mean, like if they opened up stuff now, like people would like flock to it. So that we had one night after our last show of the week, we all kind of flocked to this one area, which is literally right where the theater is, where we've just been chomping at the bit to go. It's where all these cute bars are and blah, blah, blah. So we had this one great night out. And then days later, they're like, there was a huge outbreak in Itaewon, which is exactly where our theater is and where we were out. And it was like, so we're like, holy shit. And so then, we get this email being like, if anyone has been in this area, like this radius, you need to go get tested. So it wasn't just the people who went out, anyone who got dinner in that area. And so that was like most of the company. So we all got up really early one day, went to this like satellite tent, not the hotel this time, and one of these sort of like portable testing sites. And we got tested again. And then that was the terrifying thing too, because it's like, okay, like the government was so cooperative with us the first time. If we get it again, like, I don't know, they'll be like, bye, you guys are irresponsible, blah, blah. So, not that we were irresponsible, but just like, you know what, like we helped you out once. Like, so we were freaking out like, oh God, if anyone gets this again, like I don't know, the show's probably over. So that 24 hour period waiting for the results was terrible. We were told that we might hear that night. So then of course we're like refresh on our phones, like all night. Then it wasn't until the next morning that we got like an indication that we got were all negative across the board. And no,
thank God.
Seriously.
So was there like any animosity with people being like, did you go out? Are you risking our jobs?
There's definitely like, I mean, no shade to our people, but we all have different, I mean, it's interesting too, because like the people that are a little more like judgmental of people doing still what's allowed, but maybe they're like, I don't know. It's like our company manager will be like, it's advised not to go to these places. And for a long time, we didn't go. But now across the board, I think people are starting to go. There's certain neighborhoods in Seoul that we weren't supposed to go to, but now it's kind of opened up. But yeah, there was, I think the people that were a little more judgmental of people sort of like testing the waters, I think we're getting a lot of people back home freaking out on them. And it's like families who are like, it's just like doom and gloom. But it's just like, yeah. So there was some tension.
Sure.
Like within the company and then, I mean, yeah, I felt it too. Like, I mean, at one point I was thinking like, oh, I don't know. Like maybe I was hearing about people doing this, and I'm one of the people that likes to push the boundaries a little bit, but yeah, it was a little stressful. But yeah, I'm trying to think. And I think since then we've been like smooth sailing for the most part. It's just like dealing with like talking to our friends and family back home and hearing how horrible it is and worrying about people who have tested positive, people who are in the hospital, people who have died, people. It's been stressful. And like I didn't mention, but like it took its toll on us physically. Like I've never been one to like for things to manifest physically, like I'm stressing out about so much, but during our first performances back, like I was finding I couldn't breathe on stage. Like my chest was heavy. And I just like, I really had to focus on breathing. And like, I was getting to the point where I was like on stage I'd be like, no more talk of dark. And I was like, and my eyes would start to go. I'm like, Matt, focus, breathe. And it was terrifying. I was like, what is wrong with me? Am I anemic? Am I like not eating enough? And blah, blah, blah. And so I was like talking about it backstage. And I just realized that it was literally I'm not awake 24 hours a day, but like literally like every waking minute of my day was like, I was consuming COVID news or like anything like stories related to COVID, jokes about COVID, like hearing people back home and their stories, I was watching the news at every moment. And I was just like, Matt, you need to take a break. This is literally like stressing you out to the point where like, you're not coping. So, I learned to, kind of have my time to check in on what's going on like with the news, and then like obviously not shutting any friends and family out, but just maybe being like, maybe we should distract ourselves from this. Yeah, I say this just because I don't want anyone to think that like it's been all like roses and peaches and cream here.
No, of course not. But you're also living in what I call like the tour bubble.
Yes.
You know, where it's like you're living in a world that isn't necessarily reality. Like it's just this bubble of people that is together.
Yeah.
And you're like a family all of a sudden, and it's like you all love each other and you're always going to remember each other. But, you know, it's like this enormous group of people that now suddenly live together and function together.
Right. Yeah.
But this time during a global pandemic.
Exactly. And I will say that it's definitely like taken its toll on us, and there's been tension and things have been heightened, as you can imagine. I mean, dramas and whatever. But yes, I think we've been reminded that like this is all we're all we have, and like we just have to love and be supportive and patient with each other. And yeah. So it's.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that With brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Has it been hard seeing the civil unrest that's been happening back home?
Yeah. It has been really hard to watch our country just like unravel, and it just seems like it's just falling apart. And I'm just thinking, like, at one point I was like, wow, is World War III about to begin or at least a civil war, like while we're away? And I just, yeah, it's been really sad. And I just really hope we can get back on track. I was literally just trying to figure out how to get my absentee ballot sent to, because I mean, that's one way to hopefully get things back on track. But yeah, we tried to do our part over here. There was a Black Lives Matter Korea movement. And so we did our own version of that. Like, I mean, of course, it's all like virtual and, but yeah, of course, we just seem so helpless. We feel helpless over here. Like, I mean, like, what can we do? I mean, I feel like that's not uncommon for people that look like us. We're just like feeling like helpless and what can we do? But I mean, our Black friends are guiding us in the right direction. It's been crazy. And as you said, living in a bubble, like we just, it doesn't feel real, like all the things that are happening back home. And so it's going to be interesting. We go back, if all goes to plan, we'll all go back to our homes in October. So I think that'll be a good, healthy dose of reality. And I feel like there's a lot of guilt that we have too. Initially, it was the fact that we still have jobs. So, I mean, that was something we were all dealing with. And we, like, I mean, I'll never forget, like, I mean, I still feel it. The audience, like, bowing after seeing, like, because after we had our scare, like the audiences, like there were some people that exchanged their tickets or had them refunded, like were scared to come because we brought Corona here. Just seeing the people in the seats, like they weren't afraid. They wanted to see Phantom and them on their feet cheering for us. Like, it was quite moving. And, cause like they're risking something. And I mean, to be honest, we kind of are too. We talked about, how we move forward. Cause like we're doing all the precautions. Like we get, our temperature checked when we come into the stage door. We can't come in if it's a certain temperature. Sanitize all moments. All the backstage, the crew, they all wear masks at all times. And, we wear masks like when we come in, but once we start getting ready, they come off. And so at that point, it's like, we just have to trust each other and just like, it's kind of like all our decisions are kind of made with the well-being of our company. So it's like, yeah, we can't get too crazy because it's like, we could come in and bring the virus in. And we talked with our resident director about how we feel about intimacy in the show. So since I and the Phantom kiss the Christines, is it 5 or 6 of us who are constantly sharing germs.
Yeah, all y'all dirty, dirty bitches.
Right, exactly.
Spreading COVID.
So we all kind of had like the same reaction. We're like, you know what? Like, I trust my fellow actors to not push it. So to know that we are doing what we can to stay healthy we're passing germs with our saliva. And we're like, that's the thing. We all kind of agree that like we do a lot of other intimate things beyond that. Like we're touching hands and then there's been all these articles about like singing and just like actors on stage projecting. Like I mean, I'm a spitter, so like I see my spit go flying. And so in the beginning, I was like terrified. I'm like, oh my god, I literally saw that go across half the stage. Like I just gave that like we just joke, I'm gave that person Corona. Like shit. But it's crazy. And then of course I was very honored to, like, I've never been in the New York Times, but they did an article on us because they were interested to see, like, how we've managed to, like, stay open during Corona. And of course, my two quotes, I'm talking about how my friends and family were freaking out about me going to Korea. And then the other quote is me talking about the spit flying out of my mouth during masquerade. I'm like, New York Times quote. But hey. See,
dreams come true. You just should dream a little more specifically.
Exactly.
How's your family now that you've been there for a bit? Now are they like, oh, okay, you can stay there.
Yeah, they're very happy to know that I'm in a safer place. Yeah, I don't think there's any worry. I think, yeah, I'm trying to think when the shift was. At first, they were very worried. And then it went, like, very quickly with the outbreak in the U.S. to be like, oh, actually, you know what? I'm in the safer place. And honestly, I feel like if anywhere in the world, like, this is where I'd want to be, like, during this crisis. And God forbid, like, getting it, like, it'd be terrible, but I would be in safe hands. And so they're all about, like, yes, yeah, stay over here and ride this out.
Yeah, but also, like, you and all of your company and crew, it's very inspiring, and it gives us all hope, because over here, like, we don't have anything to look forward to right now.
True.
Just very dismal.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, seeing, I see feeds, like actors' feeds on Facebook, and they're all talking about leaving New York for at least a year and getting 9-to-5s and just, like, maybe not returning to the business again. I'm like, wow, this is, I mean, I will say, even with the job, this crisis has made me reevaluate what my priorities are, I guess. Like, and does this business, like, fulfill that? And I've come to realize it does, but, yeah, it's been crazy. I was going to say something else, but I don't.
Well, is it strange when you're living in one world where you're literally doing one of my favorite Broadway shows, and like you are doing the Broadway production of Phantom of the Opera in Korea,
right?
Literally one of the only Broadway shows to be running right now. And the entire industry is sort of like all over the world except you. And maybe a couple of others. Like,
yeah.
It's like we're not coming back until there's a cure. We're like, our country is in this civil war over wearing a mask.
Right. It makes me so mad that that's been politicized. I'm like, this is literally, it's science. Like, with two masks, like, there will be no spread. It's like, I don't understand it, but I was happy to see Donald wearing a mask in some photo. I was like, okay, so maybe his followers will follow suit. It's horrible. I mean, basically, like, moving forward, I feel like it can happen. And it's just so frustrating, because it's like, if people comply, that's how... you guys go back to work. It's crazy. Like the whole, like, they were doing, do you see the thing about the London Palladium and Andrew Lloyd Webber was trying to get just to see how that would go. And so there was some kind of, like, benefit concert, and that was this week. And it was kind of sad to look at the people in the audience, because, like, it was very socially distanced and there are all these empty seats, but it happened. And I mean, we'll see if there was any like repercussions from that or any, but that's, it's funny, Andrew Lloyd Webber, he was quoted in the article too, but, like, social distancing that's not the answer. It's, because, like, we literally are, I mean, granted, there's people who are more compliant here, but, because that's what my friends back home saying, like, but this will never happen in the U.S. People don't follow the rules, blah, blah, everyone's, like, they're way too independent, so whatever. And but I'm like, I don't know if I completely agree with that. Like, we have people, like, we've been sold out, like, the last couple weeks, and, like, there's every seat is filled and everyone wears a mask and then no one gets COVID. I just don't. So it's, I, I don't like to see the theaters that I see like with their new plans of reopening and like it's all about social distancing and like there's going to be half or less than half the seats filled and there's going to be like these like plexiglass like encasings and like I just
did you see the Beef and Boards trailer for Beehive with them wearing the face shields?
I literally scream laughed. I couldn't believe that was real. Like that seemed like a parody. I mean, no offense to them, but like
no, it's not the performer's fault. It's just, you know.
But I was like, come on. That and there's a parody on that. I forgot. I'll just send that.
Jordan Grubb.
Oh, yeah,
did it, and it's the Poultry Players.
Yes.
Or whatever. It's so funny.
Oh God. Yeah, that was. Yeah. So I just don't want to. I just don't feel. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Of course, I don't have all the answers, but like, I just feel like that's not the way to go. And I know everyone's anxious to get their theaters up and running again, and people want to get back to work. But I'm just. I don't know. I just want to make sure it's done properly, and I don't know. I wish I had all the answers and could make everyone wear masks, but
I know. I think over here we're just sort of waiting to get a vaccine because that's the only thing that hopefully will shut people up.
Seriously,
it's very strange, but it's been very amazing to get to pop up online and be like, "Oh my God, look, Matt." Matt is in Phantom of the Opera. He's starring in Phantom of the Opera right now. Mm. And look at all of his friends. There's the Christine and there's the Phantom. Mm. Phantom is one of my dream roles. Dream shows. It is. Oh. I got to go in for it for Andre.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to give a really good performance. And then my friend Brad came in and I was like, oh, I'm going to give a really good audition and he's the one that's going to book it. And he was the one who booked it.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I was happy to see him.
Me too. He deserved it and he's perfect for it.
He's one of, I don't know if you saw it with him, but he was one of the El Gallos I worked with at Fantastics.
Oh, really?
So I'd see him do that. But yeah.
I love him.
Yeah, he's great. So talented.
I know, but Phantom's been one of my favorite shows since I was a kid. I love it. I
love that.
I can see it over and over again.
Oh, you know what? It's funny. It's one of those shows I guess because I didn't see myself ever being in it because like the way I saw it being cast, I was like, that's not me. So I guess I maybe just was like, oh, it's Phantom. And then once I started going in for it, which was only for this production, like it was never, so it basically like, oh, okay, I'll just, well, actually, this story is actually kind of weird, but do you want to hear how I ended up doing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically I was doing Sweeney Todd down at Barrow Street and I was standing by for Toby, Anthony, Beetle, and I just come off of, well, right before that was Gentleman's Guide where I was covering Monty. And so I was like in this place of like, Matt, like it's time. Why am I talking to myself in third person? That's disgusting.
No, it's not. It's so hot. I'm really into that.
But I was like talking to myself. It was so cool. So for like 3 months before my bike got stolen and I got into a little accident a couple stitches later. Before that, I was had like 3 months of riding my bike on the Hudson River, and I was like, this is such a like a sexy way to get to work, and I'm like going to my little off Broadway theater, and like how cute is this? And I'm thinking I gotten an appointment to go in for this world tour as the Raoul understudy, and I was like, ugh, again, like. At least bring me in for the role and then cast me like that, whatever. So I am on my bike and I'm just like, I was like being such a bitch. I was like, I don't want to do it. I'm not going to go. And so like, I'm riding my bike and then I literally like had to like swerve and right as I look up, it's a MTA bus with Phantom plastered all over it. And I like, I look up and I was like, okay, I'll go to this damn audition. And then only like at that point, like I'd done an Asian tour right out of college. And I was just like, cause most of the tour, it's been Asia and the Middle East. And I mean, Tel Aviv, if it was in there too, so that was pretty cool. But I was like, I don't want to go back to Asia, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, I'll just go in and I'll do a good job because like I haven't been in for Tara Rubin in a while, whatever. So going in there and then I have the next audition with the team. And then at that point, it's like to cover Andre, cover Raoul, and then be a swing or something. And I was like,
oh, that's a lot of work.
I did a swing once to get my equity card. And I was like, I don't think that's my job. And all the power to the swings.
It's so much work.
I did realize with Sweeney that I can be a standby for multiple roles. Like I'm good at roles, but I ensemble and knowing on this person, I'm over here doing it on the left, but then no. Brain doesn't work like that. But so I went from that, and then they're like, the team was like, we are going to pitch you to Hal Prince as an Andre, but if for some reason, if he doesn't see you like that, would you be up for like ensemble covering or whatever? And I was like, sure. And the whole time I'm thinking like, do I read a little young for Andre? I don't know. But I'm like, whatever. I want to meet Hal Prince. Let's just go in and have fun. And then I think the idea was, since I'd already been working on the Raoul material as well, so when I went in, Hal cut me off with like that, I know all your greatest roles, senior. But he's like, basically like, no. And he's, let's look at the Raoul packet. And so we did that and it clicked. And then I left. And then I was like, I think I just got Raoul. And it was so weird because Hal had like two choices for all the principals. And because he just came in for that last day. And it was just me and my good friend Kurt on the tour. And so I was so glad that he got it, because we connected and waiting outside. And I was like, he seems really cool. He's my bestie on the road. And so it just all kind of like clicked the way it was supposed to. And so I'm glad I decided to go to the audition. Goes to show you don't know like how things are going to like shuffle out in the end. Like I was going to take a stand, like, because, you know, sometimes you hear people talk about that, like, you need to make a stand and be like, I'm not going to be an understudy anymore, or I'm not going to like blah, 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 blah. And then people might listen after a while. But my whole thing was like, I just wanted to do good for Phantom, because maybe one day there'll be something that they want me for.
I'm shocked that you weren't just Raoul off the bat.
Well, it's weird, because I thought like, because, I mean, no offense to this tour, but it's kind of like, like a Sita version of it. It's like, and they've made it so it's much more travelable. So it's exactly the same staging, but they just made it so that the travel time in between cities is shorter. So And I'm pretty sure this will be the model that they follow moving forward for all the touring productions of Phantom, assuming it'll continue to tour. So it's like. I agree. Yeah, I was kind of like, oh, come on, you guys. And
Like, you're the young hot dude that can act and sing and dance. Like, that's Raoul. Like,
he's being very kind, but thank
you. No, I'm not. I'm like Andre's crotchety. Like, anyway, no offense, Andre's, but you're crotchety.
He, yeah. I get to like write out my ingenue years or whatever you want to call it, like on this gig. It's nice, especially like coming back, like what am I in a rush to come back for? And then I'm gonna be in this weird no man's land age wise, so I might as well just sort of kind of coast along here. So I just signed on for some more time, barring any natural disasters, COVID spread, and it looks like I'll be doing this for a while.
Good. You live your life out there, and let me know if you need a dresser. I'm not good at wardrobe stuff, but I can hand you a scarf.
Do you do hair? We have a hair opening. No, I'm joking.
but I can put some mousse in your hair and be like, voila, go get Christine. Keep your hands at the level of your eyes.
Right, bitch.
Bitch.
I would love to have you here. I mean, yeah, people are leaving. We got some openings.
Could I be Carlotta?
I think you could.
I'd be good. Actually, Madame Giry is my dream role.
Honestly, it's funny. Anytime in an interview people ask me, what other role would you play? It's always Madame Giry. She's so freaking, like, I don't know. She's so mysterious. She knows everything that's going on in that opera house. That's the role.
During my time at prom, Brooks Eshmanskas is also obsessed with Phantom.
Really?
And we can do the whole thing by heart. And like, we would constantly backstage be like, let her sing for you, monsieur. She has been well taught. A chorus girl. we constantly would do that. And fun fact, His best friend in college was Peter Dinklage, which is hilarious to me.
Wait, this and is Brooks,
Brooks Eshmanskas.
Yeah, his best friend.
And he introduced Peter Dinklage to Phantom of the Opera.
Oh my God.
He has a great story about them getting shit-faced in Peter's dorm, like on wine, and him playing the cassette tape and like talking him through Phantom of the Opera.
Yes. Oh, thank you for sharing the love of Phantom.
Yeah.
I love that story.
Well, I love you. You're part of a really cool legacy, Matt.
I mean, it's been one of those like slow burns. Have you ever done like, I'm sure you've done, like, when you've been plugged into something, it's corporate theater, basically. It's like, this thing is, it ain't broke, so they're not going to change anything. So it's like, and this being a brand new production, I was thinking there might be a little more, but it's funny, as much as I felt that, like, this is what it is, and this is, people are like, oh, your take is so, like, fresh and whatever, and I'm like, oh, I thought I was just doing exactly what I was told, but I guess, you know, being who we are, we just naturally bring whatever. But but it's been one of those shows where I'm like, I love it more and more each time I do it. And I'm like, it's crazy. And like, I'm coming on 2 years and I'm like, I'm not done yet. Like, I'm still growing in it. And I mean, I'm still, I swear it's like a great tool or great, I'm still training how to do 8 shows. And honestly, this is the first long run I've done. Well, I guess I mean Fantastics, but I mean, this is a little different, I guess. I don't know, or maybe me being a little older, like it's the wear and tear and the fatigue and the 5-show weekends and
oh my God, I hate a 5-show weekend. I hate them.
We were such little idiots yesterday. I don't know if you've ever done this on the road, but like we're such dorks. A couple of people started this music theater book club, so we'll every once in a while, we'll like one person, it'll be their turn and they'll pick the show basically with a role they want to work on in mind. And then these other two, like one of our brilliant pianists and one of our ensemble members will, they'll basically like kind of cast it. And so then we basically just do a reading of it with no rehearsal. You just like kind of just sort of wing it. And it's always a delightful train wreck, but it's like, but it's really fun. And we had like this idiotic idea on a Friday before in the middle of a 5-show weekend to do Les Mis. So we're like, what the fuck? Like it was like, I was done. And I was like, I have to do my job after this. So we're dorks in them. But it's a way to keep us fresh. And it made me realize how out of shape I am. Cause it's like, you do your 8 shows, but then it's like, if you try to do other stuff, like, I don't know.
How out of shape you are. Shut up. You do 8 shows a week. What? You're not supposed to do a 9th of Les Mis.
I know. I was like, that is not. So I'm taking the next one off. I'm like, I need some time to recover.
No. You're amazing. You're amazing. Well, listen, my dream for you well, I have many dreams for you. But when all this is over, I want to see you as Raoul, and I want it to be on Broadway.
Oh, that's
what I want, because you're incredible. I like how they always plaster the new Christine and Raoul on the masquerade wall. I'm like, that is the body of Sarah Brightman. You're not fooling me, but...
Wait, I've never noticed that.
Oh, yeah, they do it all the time. P.S. Do you remember when Sarah Brightman was training to go onto the moon to sing Andrew Lloyd Webber songs in space? Do you remember that? I have this idea, like, I don't know, I want to make a show about Sarah Brightman, like I am Sarah Brightman, and be like, hello, I'm Sarah Brightman, which, you know what, in all fairness, that's also my... what's her name impression, that woman that sings Wild Wild Horses. And the I Dreamed a Dream lady.
Susan Boyle? No.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Susan Boyle.
Oh my God.
I dreamed a dream and I'm gone by.
Will you please do that? I want to see both of those.
I trained with Sarah Brightman on the moon. I only drink moon water. Anyway.
Yeah, I love that. Matt,
I love you. Thank you for staying up so late. What is it, 2 a.m. there?
Oh, it is. Oh my God. Wow.
Do you have two shows tomorrow?
We do.
Maybe.
I know. But you, this was lovely. I'm so glad I got to talk to you and see you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you for coming on. And I just love you to death. And I'm so happy and proud for you.
Oh, and I can't wait to start seeing you plastered all over Broadway.
One day when the plague is over.
Yeah.
Well, I love you, sweet boy. You have a great night. And everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to Josh Swallow's Broadway Season 2. Stay tuned for next week. Josh Swallow's Broadway is produced by Alan Seals, Dory Berenstein, and myself, Josh Lehman, with associate producer Elizabeth Wheelis. And special thanks to our Patreon producers, David Rimmer and Josh Harris. You can join them. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/Josh Swallows Broadway. Leave a rating. Leave a review. I read them. This is how I continue living. Help me live. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for keeping Broadway alive. And swallow you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.